Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, we got a good show for you. NBA champions, the Milwaukee Bucks. Feels weird to say, right? Really does. What's even stranger is the fact that we are so remarkably prone to hyperbole, right? Welcome in. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show. We're with you live every day, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. Sirius XM 217, 203, iHeartRadio app, foxsportsradio.com, or our hundreds and growing Fox Sports Radio affiliates. There are other things going on. Training camps getting underway with rookies reporting to NFL teams. The Olympics are close. We think they're going to go off. We don't know if without a hitch because there have already been hitches. Baseball continues on, but it's in fact baseball. And we crowned an NBA champion last night. First, Dan Beyer, who is a native of Wisconsin, and he's not one of these like, hey, I just became a Bucks fan 5 minutes ago, right? Not one of these brand new crisp Bucks fans, been a long time Bucks fan. Dan, how are you this morning?
Great, Doug. Absolutely great.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good feeling when your team finally does it, right? I mean, When you've seen them through the very, very bottom and a lot of the middle, like let's not act like Milwaukee has been a colossal joke of a franchise. It hasn't been the Clippers throughout their existence, right? They've kind of been a perennial playoff team that has never really, with you know one or two exceptions, since Kareem left, they've never been able to get to the finals. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals once, but they haven't been terrible. They've always just been good, right?
Yeah, even in the 80s, I would say they would always match up with like losing to Boston in the Eastern semis. They'd face the Hawks and Sixers in maybe a first round series and maybe get to the Eastern Conference semifinals, but you could never really get past Boston during those times. Then obviously the Pistons came on, but they were good, but they could never even break through. And that's what actually made, you mentioned the Eastern Conference Finals, when they ended up going in 2001, it was such a big deal because they had never gotten that really in recent history, and now to win an NBA title is just 20 years later off the charts.
Okay, obviously the biggest talking point is Giannis is 50, drops a 50 piece on the way out the door, and they're NBA champions, and that was the finishing move we wondered if they had. But what I've heard today is I like to smile because it does happen every year. Like literally every year, a team wins a championship and here we go with the dynasty. It happened last year with the Lakers. Like the Lakers were in the bubble. They were a tremendous defensive team. Remember, they didn't have to play the Clippers. And they got great matchups along the way. They didn't have to play the Bucks, who were the best team in the East in the regular season. And instead, they got the Heat, who were probably the third or fourth best team. And immediately the Lakers' new dynasty had begun until they lost this year. And injuries were very much a factor. Additionally, we've seen this done before. I mean, I've heard, hey, greatest ending of series ender performance they've ever seen because it's 50 points. Now, I'm going to admit Giannis was outstanding last night. Part of the issue is this, like, the matchup favored them the entire series. Phoenix does not really have the type of personnel that can match up with Giannis. The Lakers do. The Sixers do. When fully healthy, the Nets did. There are plenty of other teams that do. You have to have a center who can guard him some, and preferably, you know, the shot blocking type like a Jokic, for example, like an Anthony Davis, and somebody who's a big enough body to also guard him on the perimeter. They had DeAndre Ayton, you know, who had to match them sometimes. And they really didn't, Jay Crowder, like, they really didn't have another option for a guy who matched him up size for size and had some of the versatility. Some of it doesn't exist because he's frankly like an X-Men, right? Like, who creates a 6'9", 235-pound athletic figure with the type of dexterity of Giannis Antetokounmpo? Some of this was the fact that he's just literally a freak of nature. Some of it is there's no real matchup. But, I mean, we've gone completely off the deep end. I'll put this to Dan. Like, Dan is a very reasonable sports fan. Like, he loves his team, but he's reasonable about it, right? Like, and I watched the Nets series. Kevin Durant was far and away the best player in that series. I'm not sure Giannis was the second best player in that series because he struggled based upon their ability to match up with him. And they survived a depleted Nets team in order to advance. And yet somehow now we've gotten to this, it's Giannis's league and everybody's just like, what are you even talking about? Like, what conversation are we having here? I'm not trying to diminish their championship. They won the championship. They stayed healthy enough. They survived. They came back, won a game 7 against the Brooklyn Nets, where they just had a little bit more juice in the tank in overtime, as well as they were healthier. They survived the Atlanta Hawks without Giannis. They win the last two games without him, right? And they, frankly, survived the Phoenix Suns, despite the fact that the first game was really a feeling out process. Was Giannis healthy, and how would the matchups play? And they won the last four games of the series. I'm not trying to diminish that, but the reality is no one, if you were all healthy and you all lined up, no one would go like, you know, the best team is the Bucks. And I don't believe many, if any, would say, you know, if you line them all up and they're all healthy, I'm going to take Giannis above everybody else. But what happens? You win a championship, and now let's talk dynasty. You drop 50 in game 6. First time he's made this many free throws in his career, and we freak out. It was a dramatic finishing move. Dramatic finishing move. But this idea that all of a sudden that erases the realities of where he stands, the league, all the injuries. It's like laughable. Wasn't the best finishing game of all time? Wasn't honestly, probably wasn't in the conversation. I mean, last summer at this time, what were we still buzzing? What were we still talking about? We were talking about The Last Dance, right? The Last Dance. Okay, so the argument towards Giannis is he had 50. They won a game at home. It was a great win. I'm not even close to trying to diminish it. Not close. But if we want to be honest about what exactly, you know, like what's the best finishing game, you're going to tell me that's better than Michael Jordan's last game with the Chicago Bulls? You're like, well, it was so long ago. It was. And he didn't shoot a great percentage, 15 of 35 in altitude. Okay. But he had 45 points. He had the game-winning steal. He had the last three buckets and two free throws to seal the deal, including the game winner over Brian Russell. Like, and if you want to argue that Giannis was better, like, okay. It's fine. I mean, it's a different sport now. You take power forwards off the floor and you put them with the ball in their hands and you spread everybody out and they play downhill. It's really hard to determine what everything would look like. And in this era, it was fantastic. And there was pressure on the Bucks. If they didn't win last night, I do think that it would have been really hard to win a game 7 on the road in Phoenix, as both teams clearly played better at home. But we're so prone to this hyperbole, this immediate reaction. We're like, oh, man, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And it may be the greatest thing you ever saw in the last 5 minutes. LeBron James, game 7 against the San Antonio Spurs. That was amazing. That was amazing. Kyrie Irving, game 7 against the Golden State Warriors. Like, that was amazing. But instead, what we do is the last thing we see has to be the best thing we see. And I guess the working hypothesis I've come up with is this. I tried to figure out for a long time, why do we do this? why is everything greater, better, special, more spectacular at this particular moment? And I don't think it's because we want to credit Giannis for how well he played. I really don't think that's what it is. You want to know what it is? This is a personal thought hypothesis. I think we all want affirmation for how good our generation is. This time is. And so by doing it, we pick out whatever is the winner, whoever is the best, and we heap this praise on it because it makes us feel better about our own failures. NBA players will do it as well. Oh, Giannis is the greatest performance ever. Why? Because that's them saying the only way to beat them is to have one of these incredible performances. When the truth is, it was really good. It was really good. And the series gave us one of everything, right? You had a Chris Paul carried you game. Phoenix hits 20 out of 43's game. You have a Giannis block, which changed things. You have a Drew Holiday game. And then you have one game where Giannis completely and thoroughly dominates in the win. But he's not better than Kevin Durant. He's, I don't believe, better than Kawhi Leonard, although Kawhi's going to come back from reconstructive knee surgery. Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Jokic, Luka, all these guys, because they are more skilled shooting the basketball, what he's able to do, what he's able to accomplish is fantastic, and he does play both ends. But like we were just talking about how bad a shooter he is, how bad a free throw shooter he is, you know, a day ago. Could they overcome it? One win, one performance does not eliminate all of that. Although, if I'm going to be fair, when you make 17 out of 19 in a big moment like that, oftentimes there's carryover for the rest of your career, or at least for the next year. Like, it's the opposite of Nick Anderson. Nick Anderson misses four free throws at the end of game one in the finals, never the same. Be interesting to see if Giannis making free throws at the end of this series, he's never the same. He's finally figured it out.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What does the Fox say? Steven Jackson, NBA champion, was on First Things First. He had this to say about Giannis saying he didn't have to join a super team to win a championship.
He's on a super team. You got Drew Holiday. You got a closing Middleton. He's the most dominant player that I've seen in a long time, and I got to give him his credit. But he has a closer. He has a closer. Same things, just like Shaq had. Shaq was the most dominant, but he had a closer in Kobe. And you have Drew Holiday, one of the best defenders in the game. So don't make it seem like your team is just a whole bunch of D-leaguers. You know, you have one D-leaguer that's an all-star now. So you have a super team. You might not have super names and guys that selling tennis shoes, but you have a super a super team. Don't diminish your teammates.
Let's contextualize what he means in the super team. For people who don't know what Steven Jackson is referring to, Ramos, if you could pull up the tape of what Giannis said about not needing to join a super team, it doesn't diminish your teammates, right? Let's truly explain. This is what Giannis had to say at his post-game press conference. Oh, well, we'll get to it in 1 second. The idea is, like, what is a super team? A super team is forming a team of all-stars where one previously did not exist or exist nearly on that level. And I think it's obviously a direct shot at the Brooklyn Nets, but he's not the only super team, whatever. Take a listen.
Coming back, I was like, this is my city. You know, they trust me. They believe in me. They believe in us. Even when we were lost, the city still was like on our side. And you know, obviously, I wanted to get the job done. You know, but that's my stubborn side. Like, it's easy to go somewhere and go and win a championship with somebody else. It's easy. I could go. I don't want to put anybody in the spot. But I could go to a super team, and you know, just do my part and win a championship. Still won. But this is the hard way to do it, and this is the way to just do it. And we did it. We did it, man.
They did it, and you can't take it. I mean, the reality is, like, they had a lot of things going their way. The injuries to the Nets, who were completely dominant. Like, the Nets were 40 points better than them in the game before Kyrie Irving got hurt, and that was before James Harden came back. Like, the Nets were so much better than the Bucks, it was stupid. And they matched up better with them. So let's not pretend like the Bucks are the best team. They were the healthiest team, and he played great. And it's not the first time. We've had other teams that were that people believe are great teams that really had an easy run to the finals as well. So I'm not trying to diminish it. I'm just telling you the reality of it. But I would also go back at Steven Jackson. Nobody thinks the Bucks are a super team. I love Jrue Holiday. Most NBA players love Jrue Holiday, okay? But you wouldn't consider Jrue Holiday a top five at his position guy. He's a tremendous, tremendous all-around player, tremendous defensive player, an up-and-down shooter, kind of in-between position guy, but he fits what they need. He does. But that's not a super team. A super team is creating a team of all-stars where one previously didn't exist, right? The Miami Heat, and I know they had won a championship, but the Miami Heat adding two all-stars from the Eastern Conference, completely pulling out the chair of the Toronto Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you have LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh at the same time, all relatively in some part of their prime, that's a super team. The Boston Celtics were a super team with Kevin Garnett and then Paul Pierce, who was already there. And then eventually they added Ray Allen. Like, that's three super, that's a super team. The Lakers getting LeBron James, then adding Anthony Davis. That is some form of super team. The Golden State Warriors, who we should point out, they lost in the NBA Finals before KD joined them. But with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, it's a super team. Heck, the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James. Like, that's one of the things that really is irritating. The Cavs had a number one overall pick in Kyrie Irving. They added LeBron James and Kevin Love. And Kevin Love is a perennial all-star and seen as the best power forward in basketball. That was a super team. Those are super teams. And creating teams where one previously didn't exist. That's not what the Bucks are. The Bucks were a very, very good team that, you know, they brought in Middleton, they drafted Giannis, and they made a move to get Jrue Holiday to put them over the top after trying to figure out the point guard situation for a couple years. It's not a super team. It doesn't mean your team isn't super, but it's not a quote unquote super team.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Daniel Jeremiah joins us. DJ, how big a loss is it for the LA Rams to lose their starting running back at this point in time in the preseason?
Okay, it's a great question, and I'm going to answer that question in just a moment. But I took some notes, Doug, because during the update, you talked about deep throat. And, yes. You know, obviously unnamed sources. So I wrote down three options. I'm going to let you choose. If I ever use you as my unnamed source,
yeah.
I wrote down, they got to be two words. So I have nice handles. I have no look. Mm. And I have one ACL. So it's your choice, whichever.
I think one ACL would be a dead giveaway.
Okay.
No look, I think, or just you could just do blind pass or just blind, whatever, you know. So because if you do no look, it's too obvious. But blind, okay, which would be no look, would maybe.
And you're kind of giving me an assist. You know, you're giving me information. Yeah. Like it kind of works together there.
It does.
It really does.
Have you ever torn your ACL?
No. I've done Achilles, and I've had two MCLs, and I've done a meniscus.
When you do the MCL, how do they fix the ligament?
So, I had the first one I did was at Appalachian State, and I don't know that I necessarily got the best medical care at that time in 1998. So they went in, and I still have about a 6-inch scar on the inside of my knee where they had to go back in and actually like kind of tacked it back down. And I had torn part of my hamstring when I did that as well. So they went in there, screws, the whole deal. And then I did it again on the other leg a couple years later, and it was like, yeah, no, we don't operate on this anymore. Like, it's just you straight leg brace it, and then, you know, you just rehab, and then you're back and ready to go. But I'm like, well, wait a second. 2 years ago, you just sliced my knee open like 6 inches, and now 2 years later, they don't do that anymore? Like, good timing.
Okay, so that actually leads me to the Tom Brady. We're making that to be super heroic that he tore his MCL at some point in time. But you've torn your MCL. Is that manageable?
Yeah, I was out, and I'm I don't profess to be any kind of a tough guy. So I was out for, you know, I think maybe during the season when I did it, I think that put me down for 3 or 4 weeks. But I was the option quarterback. So, I mean, I ran around. Like, not having, you know, my leg to be able to do that severely inhibited our ability to run our offense. So if I was going to be in the shotgun just sitting back there and had enough arm strength, which I didn't, to just, you know, stick and pick and do that, I would have probably been able to play through it a little earlier.
Okay, so let's get back to the Rams. How big a loss? Yep.
No, I think it's a big loss because stylistically he's a really good young player, and Cam Akers. And I think stylistically he gave him some physicality, which when you want to throw the ball and be as creative as they are, there's still that offense in the Super Bowl year was a great example, was at their best when they not only could run the ball a little bit, but they were able to run it with some physicality when you had to run it. And Gurley gave them that at that point in time. And I thought Cam Akers, fresh legs, yes, but just runs behind his pads. He can get you tough yards. I think he'll still be able to, you know, run the ball between the 20s, and they'll be able to make some, you know, things happen because that outside zone scheme is so good. But it, to me, it's short yardage, those tough grind out yards inside the tight red zone. I thought Akers had something that the rest of their backs don't in terms of that physicality. So I do think they'll miss it.
Yeah, and this was also, one, potentially a breakout year for him. Two, I mean, that's a big part of how they really want to play. One, they need Stafford to be able to push the ball down the field. But, I mean, truth be told, Sean McVay wants to run the football. You know, much like Kyle Shanahan, doesn't mean it's the same system, but everything they do is predicated on their ability to run the football, isn't it?
No doubt. And, you know, I still think, you know, I was going back and looking because you see some of these names when you look at the roster, you say, okay, who's going to fill in? And then the one running back was Davion Nixon, I believe, was a guy that I had liked coming out. I didn't even remember it, but somebody had posted a video I had posted when he was coming out of SMU. He was undrafted. And he's got some talent. So they've got some talent back there, but they don't have anybody quite like Cam Akers. But I do have another question for you, Doug, which is, I was talking about this with Bucky on the podcast the other day, and speaking of Stafford and the Rams.
By the way, the podcast is Move the Sticks. You should download it. It's a great listen. All things football. He and Bucky Brooks. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I appreciate you. So the comparison I made was, because, you know, Stafford gets hit with the lack of postseason success, first overall pick, you know, there for an extended period of time. It didn't happen, so he catches some of that heat, some of that blame. I thought the comparison for him that I've never heard people talk about would be Carson Palmer, you know, because Carson, I looked it up. He had 2 winning seasons when he was there in Cincinnati. Obviously, he had to wait for a minute to get on the field, but I think he was there for 6-7 years. And the success came kind of after he left with Andy Dalton, where they reeled off all those divisional games in a row. Now, obviously, he got hurt in the playoff game against the Steelers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that you look at kind of the expectation, and nobody doubted the skill level of Carson. Everybody knew how talented he was. It didn't work out at the second stop with the Raiders, but then he found his way to the Cardinals and had a lot of success there in that brief period of time. So I thought that was an interesting kind of a career parallel for Matthew Stafford that people don't really talk about.
So, I mean, Steve Young, he failed in the USFL. I don't remember what he did in USFL, but with Tampa Bay Buccaneers before he, you know, he took over a ready-made team in the Niners. It's a little bit different and a more successful team. He took over Joe Montana's team, right? Mm-hmm. There have been guys. Yeah, but that's the big question is,
I mean, the first pick in the draft, both those guys.
We have no idea, though, how he will perform at the highest level when everything matters, right? It's a hard one. It's a different sport in the playoffs. It's a different attention to detail. Things matter differently. But he has all the talent, and from what I've been told by Rams guys, like, they never felt like the offense the Lions ran even fit his skill set, whereas they feel like their offense fits what he does way better than anything he's done before.
Yeah, you're going to have to defend every blade of grass when you play the Rams now. Where in the past, you know, a lot of condensed formations, a lot of those over routes, a lot of the, you know, working in the middle of the field. Jared Goff is very comfortable and confident working in there. Now I think you're going to see stuff outside to the perimeter with his arm strength. He's going to be able to reach areas of the field that they just haven't been able to reach previously.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Ben Roethlisberger is like going to go basically vegan, you know, great, best shape of his life. You know, don't worry. It feels like that's actually admitting that to me, it's great, right? It's never a wrong time to do the right thing, get yourself in shape. But isn't it admitting that he didn't do the work for a long time?
Yeah, I don't think he necessarily ever hid from that. The fact that he, you know, he didn't do that in terms of taking care of his body. Now, the success that he had is probably a pretty good defense of his training methods. But as that started to, the performance started to fall off, I think he kind of reached that point where it's like, okay, you know, I need to put a little bit more time and effort into maintaining my body. Also, I think, you know, losing what he lost through that arm injury. Now, hopefully he's going to have a little bit more of that back after he's further removed from that. But it's good to see he's in great shape. But Doug, when I look at this team, and I've always been, you know, have so much respect for the Steelers, having worked in that division for a couple different teams, and I always, they're kind of my default, you know, just when in doubt, just you can go with the Steelers to make a, you know, have a good year because they've been so consistent for decades now. But this offensive line is not good. I don't like the changes that they made to address it to try and get better. And I thought the field shrunk last year because Ben couldn't, you know, physically push the ball down the field. I don't, even if his arm's feeling better, I don't know that he's going to have the time to be able to push the ball down the field. I just don't think they're very good up front, and that might not be the best division to be bad up front in.
I would agree with you. That is an incredible division, especially considering the talent that Cleveland has, the sneaky talent that Cincinnati has been able to accumulate from years of being bad. And then, of course, you have Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah.
Yeah, I guess my question on Baltimore is this. The people I've talked to in the NFL are like, look, you like Lamar, and he's had great success in this short period of time. But if you're going to pay him that next big contract, then something's got to give. And he's had Super Bowl caliber defenses the past couple of years. Is this the last year that they can do it because of the contract that he's still under?
Yeah, I think they're going to end up having to pay and pay big. And we talked about this, I think, last week, you know, in terms of how they decide to do that. To me, it would be, I'm okay with a higher average over a shorter amount of years. You know, I don't know that I want to make the long-term commitment, but I think I would be okay with doing it for the next 2 to 3 years to pay him handsomely, because I think he'll be able to hold up during that period of time. But no, yeah, this is go time for this group. You know, they're ready to win right now. And the scary thing is, I think when you look at Cleveland, Cleveland not only has you could argue a more talented roster, 53-man roster than the Ravens do. Now they've also shown that this is not just kind of a one-off. They didn't just kind of fall into some players and get lucky. They've kind of proven with their current structure and their leadership there with Andrew Berry kind of running the show that they know how to draft. So, and that's been the Ravens' big advantage, is they don't have those lulls where they have a bad, you know, couple years of drafting. They draft good players every year. And now you have Cleveland in that division, which I think has a little bit of a talent advantage at this point in time. And you can't count on the fact they're going to screw it up every April. They're not. They're too well run right now, which is weird to say about the Browns.
What happens with Deshaun Watson this year? Best guess.
The only thing I would feel good about saying is I think that his next snap will be with either the Philadelphia Eagles or the Miami Dolphins. And I would imagine, you know, that snap wouldn't take place in the first half of the season. I mean, and this is just me guessing here.
Yeah.
But those are the two teams that I would imagine he's going to be playing for, one of those two next. I don't ever see him taking a snap with Houston. I do imagine, you know, once this stuff gets kind of settled, that he's going to have a punishment from the league, which I can't imagine being, you know, less than, you know, 6-8 games. I would think they'd be a pretty stiff penalty. But again, that's just all my, you know, speculating and what I think could happen.
How did we miss on Tua?
well, let's not get the final verdict in at this point in time. Let's give him a little more time to see what he can do. But, you know, he didn't have a kind of a wow trait. You know, he's not a huge guy. He doesn't have a huge arm. He's a good, not great athlete. I thought the best thing that he has going for him is that he's got really, really quick hands. He's really outstanding in the RPO game. So I think they're going to continue to craft that offense around the things that he does really well, where he's very comfortable, and that's going to be trying to RPO people to death. So that's kind of the challenge when you're playing in a system in Alabama and with the players that he had around him. You're gonna thrive. You're gonna be successful. You've got to find a way to still evaluate the player inside that system with that skill. So that's why those evaluations are tough.
Yeah, but the no wow traits, and I'm agree with you. Like, look, it's just his first year, but that's really what jumped out at me. Like, there wasn't a, you know, it's like young quarterbacks. It's a lot like playing golf, right? You got to just give me just one throw that makes you go like, oh, okay, I see it now, and it just didn't appear to have that. But how did? I mean. Look, you go back 2 years ago, and there was Tank for Tua talk. Like, this was the next guy to, like, yeah, I'm not really sure. It does feel like we missed some on the eval.
Well, I think he had a couple things going for him. I think Drew Brees, which has been kind of a unicorn, right? I think if you looked, if he went through next to Drew, you would say, okay, these guys are the same size, probably similar athletes. You look at arm strength, similar, and Drew's been, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's been a great quarterback in this league for two decades. So I think that was the comparison that you hung on to. And he played, look, he threw the ball really accurately at Alabama and then before the hip, and you got to give him some time to come back and get another year removed from that as well. So it's a very, very narrow path when you're talking about comparisons with his skill set that have had great careers. But I do think you kind of clung to that Drew Brees hope, and, you know, and to his own self admission, he didn't put in the time that you need to put in. And that's something that, you know, Drew Brees is head and shoulders above just about anybody that's ever played the game in terms of the preparation. So that's going to have to jump way up if he's going to have a chance to be successful.
If you were a betting man, how many games does Cam Newton start for the Patriots this year?
I will say Cam starts 6 games.
Okay.
And that can be, that gives that the hedge, because I could, that could be the first 6 games. That could be, you know, a couple here, and then we'll see what happens with a quarterback that hasn't really been hit, getting hit for the first time. So he could end up filling in at that point in time as well. But I'll say when you add it up, 17 game season, I'll say he finds his way into 6 of them as a starter.
That's Daniel Jeremiah, DJ, joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. DJ, thanks so much for joining us. This is, what is I? This is Blind, and I'm out.
Yeah, there you go. Later.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.